Sunday, January 20th, 2008. Welcome to A to Unplug the Apple 2 podcast, brought to you by A2Central.com, your total source for Apple 2 computing. Visit them on the web at www.a2central.com. And by Juice GS, the world's premier Apple II publication. Visit them at www.juice.gs. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Casey Lynn. For those of you folks who don't know, that is my 7-year-old niece, Casey Lynn. Aloha and welcome to A2 Unplug, the Apple II podcast. This is Ryan Suinaga coming to you live from beautiful Kaneohe, Hawaii. Our website is over at www.a2unplug.com. Our email address is a2unplugged@gmail.com, and our voicemail hotline is 808-218-2737. Let's dive right into the main part of our show, which is our now annual year-end review, year-beginning preview with our special guests, Eric Shepherd of Syndicom, Ken Gagne of JuiceGS, and Sean Fahey of A2Central.com. Let's join this conversation already in progress. I'd like to thank everybody for joining me today for our A2 Unplugged year-end slash year-beginning roundtable. Why don't we go around and start introducing ourselves with Eric Shepherd.
Hi, I'm Eric Shepherd. Hello. sorry. It's pretty exciting to be here. We've been trying to organize this for a while.
Yeah.
And I am the slightly frazzled and somewhat overworked owner of Syndicom, trying to keep up with a surprisingly healthy market for Apple II products.
Okay. Thank you, Sheppy. And also, you know, a well-known Apple II software developer as well. Okay. Let's move on over to, in Massachusetts, we have Ken Gagne.
Hi there. I'm Ken Gagne. I'm the editor-in-chief of JuiceGS, the last remaining Apple II publication still in print. I'm also the publisher of that newsletter. I guess you could call me the marketing coordinator for Kansas Fest, the annual Apple II Expo held in Kansas City every July. And I'm also the programmer of such famous Apple II software as Maxter.
Yes, the never-to-be-forgotten Maxter. Thanks for joining me this evening, Ken. Okay. And over in Kansas, we have Sean Fahey.
Hey, I'm Sean Fahey. I'm the site operator of A2Central, and I'm the guy that's always out looking for the news and trying to find out the latest and greatest for the Apple II community.
And it's very, very welcome that you do that. So I'd like to thank all of you folks again for showing up on this Saturday afternoon. Took us a while to get this organized, but we're all here now. So what we'll do from here, I will go over a list of topics, and we will all kind of have our turn at giving a little bit of commentary on it. So first topic for this year, 2007, the 30th birthday of the Apple II in April. This past April was the 30th birthday of the Apple II. What do you think about that? Let's start with Sheppy.
Well, first thing that comes to mind is, wow, it makes me feel a little old. Because, I've been using Apple IIs since I was 9, and so the Apple II is 30. That means that's not right. I'm pretty excited about it, actually. I've always been, like, you know, at the forefront of people saying, you know, Apple II forever and all of that. But if you had asked me in 10 years ago, say, if people were still going to be, you know, avid Apple II junkies in 2007 or 2008, I would have said, well, probably not. So it's very exciting for me that I was totally wrong about that. So 30 years, it's amazing.
Okay. Ken, do you have anything to say about that?
Well, it makes me feel pretty young because it means the Apple II is still older than I am, and so is Sheppy, of course. So I never thought when I sat down to my first computer back in the early 80s that I'd still be using it, you know, 25 years later. But I am, and it's fantastic, and all my coworkers keep telling me to get into the 21st century, and I don't know what their problem is, because I seem to be a lot more efficient than they are. But I have a computer that works. So okay. I'm thrilled with the Apple II still being around, and I look forward to another 30 years.
Okay, great. Sean?
Well, back in the late 80s, I turned my back on the Apple II, you know, thinking I was done with Apple forever. And I was really surprised that when in the kind of the mid to later 90s, I rediscovered that I kind of enjoyed rediscovering the Apple II all over again. And, you know, it's turned into this huge hobby for me. I have a garage full of gear and an office and a storage shed, and my wife would like me to get rid of it all, but it's just a lot of fun to play with and rediscover, and I've met a lot of new friends in the Apple II community. And, you know, I can see myself still continuing to play around with it and enjoy it for the next 10, 20 years or as long as the equipment holds out.
Okay, and then, yeah.
Wait, can I poke in here one second?
Sure.
I want to kind of echo what Sean just said. Some of my best friends are people that I've met in the Apple II community. I mean, Ryan, you were in my wedding party for crying out loud. We met on Genie in the Apple II chat. So this was, you know, Sean's totally right there. I've met some of the best people I know, you know, as a result of the Apple II. So,
And you kind of met your wife through the Apple II as well.
Yes, I did, actually. That's true. I met my wife in a Genie chat room about the Apple II, too. So, you know, it's the Apple II's been good to me.
Yeah, there you go. And I'd just like to say 30 years is, I mean, that's really just amazing. I think part of the challenge now is just going to be trying to see how long these things can last, because nothing lasts forever, at least not in terms of electronics. Okay, next topic. PC World Magazine names the Apple II the number two tech product of all time. For some reason, I don't have a list of what number one was, but that's the number two tech product of all time. Why don't we start again with Sheppy?
Well, I would have some concerns. I wish I knew what number one was, because I'd be hard pressed.
Netscape Navigator?
Netscape Navigator could be, certainly could be. I think that's correct.
That could be it, and that would actually be fairly hard to argue with that one, actually. But, the Apple II changed the world, and, I mean, it wasn't the first computer, it wasn't even, you know, depending on your definition, the first personal computer, but it was the first computer that actually made its way into average people's homes, and it was the first computer that was used in small business, and it was it was so many people's introduction to this modern technology that really shaped everything see around us today. Our lives would be so different now if the Apple II hadn't come along, and not just for those of us who are in the Apple II community, but just for the whole world, because things like, I mean, banking at home, and I mean, just the vast wide array of things that wouldn't have happened, or at least not have happened the same way if the Apple II hadn't come along, is really mind-boggling.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Shep. Ken?
Well, Netscape Navigator was number one, and I think that's an error, because Apple II should be number one. It does so much more than any other item on this list. Number one is Netscape, number three is TiVo. But the Apple II, 20 years ago, it came along, and it had VisiCalc for the businesses. It had all these games like Oregon Trail. It had word processor, spreadsheet, and database all in AppleWorks. It was really a jack-of-all-trades, and almost practically a master of all of them. Nowadays, you see stuff like Alienware, who makes computers specifically for gaming, and you see computers in offices that pretty much do just word processing and database. It's much more specialized now, and the Apple II was something that had appeal for everybody, and it's what showed the industry, the world really, that computers were not just for one person or one place or the other. It was for everyone. And now computers are in everybody's home. And
yeah,
the Apple II, so thank for that.
Multiple computers are in everyone's home, I think, now. Yeah, well, you know, the average household a lot of times needs needs their own IT guy to run their network. Sean?
Well, I can't argue that the Apple II is very significant, especially in my life. Basically the points that Sheppy and Ken made kind of stole all my thunder, but the Apple II is certainly, back in the late 60s, early 70s, we had shows like Star Trek on television, and we'd see visions of a potential future and science fiction, computers and everything that we can do and have today. A lot of that stuff was created by, inventions like the Apple II and making our lives more convenient and giving us access to information. Certainly the Apple II definitely deserves that number two spot on that list.
Okay. I would say that certainly if the Apple II wasn't in the top five, I would be beyond stunned. Number two, hard to argue with a web browser as number one, considering how prevalent that is, but it's definitely, the Apple II really has to be up there. Okay.
Web browser could be there without the Apple II.
That's 100% true, and a lot of these other things, I think, wouldn't be there without the Apple II. Okay, next topic. Ken may need to recuse himself on this one. Computer World, which is Ken's employer, if I recall correctly, Computer World, the print edition, names the Apple II the number four product of the last 40 years. Start with Sheppy.
Now, is that the number four product of any kind, or I don't know. Anyway, I think that pretty much everything I've said before applies here, although, number four is awfully low in my opinion. But I don't know what they ranked above it, so I can't really address that specifically. But I think it's important. The most important thing to distill from all of this is just how much recognition the Apple II gets as being of major importance in terms of shaping modern society, modern culture, modern technology.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On to Ken.
Well, even though the Apple II might have been number four at my employer's magazine, Dan Bricklin was number one, and he created VisiCalc, which was an Apple II product. And again, that just exemplifies the role that Apple II has played in a variety of industries, and the people who helped craft it are still being remembered 30 years later. I'm sure Dan Bricklin didn't think that 30 years later he would be the number one person of people in IT who mattered it. But there he is, and here we are, still using his software, or the descendants thereof.
Okay. Sean?
Well, I think the Apple II was a trailblazer in its time, not just from a functional standpoint, also from its artistic or its aesthetic view as well, because at a time when all the other computers were either big clunks of metal or had faux wood grain, they had a great marketing department, and that's probably why it's at that high up in the list.
I would build a little bit on what Sean said, that and we still see it in the Apple of today, is that they are able to make products that are really attractive to people. A lot of times that's visually attractive, and compared to the MSI and other machines of the day, I mean, the Apple II was certainly much more of a professional looking put together package rather than a kit, which was really what a lot of the other personal computers of the day were. Okay, now on to some not so great news. In 2007, two publications for the Apple II were discontinued. That would be A2 News and Notes and The Lamp, discontinued in the year 2007. Let's start again with Sheppy.
Well, I think it's always a shame to see anything related to the Apple II stop, but I know that A2 News and Notes was sort of an interesting publication. It was, from my perspective, it was really more of a tool for user groups, of which there just weren't that many left anymore anyway, than anything else. And it was sort of a nice little extra. So I don't feel a whole lot about its loss. The Lamp, I had a soft spot in my heart for The Lamp, and I was disappointed when it ended. But I know that Lyle had been having a lot of trouble rooting out enough news to make it worth the effort. And with more and more people turning to A2 Central for their news, it was just, it was something that it was time to I think, to let it go. Yeah. It's still a shame, like I said, for any Apple II related thing to end, but it served its purpose for a long time, and it was an old friend. It was time to let go, I think.
Okay. Ken?
Well, Lyle and Howard both did great jobs with their publications, and I know at least definitely Lyle let his publication die with dignity, but it seemed to me that both publications were serving as compilations or digests of things that were occurring or being reported elsewhere. The Lamp was reporting messages from various message boards, and A2 News and Notes seemed to have a lot of overlap with A2Central.com. For The Lamp, there's still a lot of messages being discussed out there. It's just that now it's migrated mostly to CSA2, the Usenet news group, and Lyle had too much trouble trying to get permission to reprint those. So although I do miss The Lamp, I'm glad to know that the news that he was compiling is still out there. The activity is still there. Same thing with A2 News and Notes. If you go to A2Central.com, Sean's site, there's news being reported on a weekly basis. So it's still there. It's just not these digests are not so handily compiling them. That's all.
Okay. Thanks, Ken. Sean?
Well, I really don't have a lot to add to that except you know, I like to tell Howard and Lyle that while they were producing those, I was very thankful for their efforts. And I think with our the community on A2 Central, the forums didn't have the traffic to support it. And of course, we also were importing the Consist Apple II news groups, where you know it seemed like you know there was a lot more participation going on. So you know they. I think Lyle would have had an impossible job keeping track of all the permissions he needed to repost that material. But I really do appreciate the hard work those guys put into those publications.
Mm. Okay, and as for me, I mean, I certainly had a close connection with both of those publications, having edited both of them, founded both of them. In a way, of course, The Lamp was more like an outgrowth of the former Genie Lamp A2. But I also would like to thank Howard and especially Lyle, because Lyle put in a tremendous amount of time over the years. I mean, I think that Doug Cuff is probably the person who is remembered a lot as the editor of Genie Lamp A2, and Lyle did actually many, many more issues than Doug did. Not to take anything away from Doug, the guy is a great writer and a great editor, but I think Lyle especially went above and beyond, and thank you to Howard. You guys are both real pros. Okay, on to a brighter topic on the continued development of Apple I and Apple II hardware. So I took a quick look through A2Central.com and my notes for the year, and I found that, you know, there were a whole bunch of different hardware development projects that were going on. A cassette interface for the Apple One, a USB to 5.25-inch floppy interface, the CFFA for the Apple One, the Blue Flash card, the super encoder, the SVD2, the Little Proto 2, Little Power, Apple II Revision Zero replicas, and the multi-IO board. So a whole bunch of different kinds of hardware programs, hardware projects. Shappy.
It amazes me, absolutely amazes me to see this happening. As software development wound down, it has kind of slowed down the last 3 or 4 years. It's been a shock to me, really, to see just this explosion of hardware development. And I think that's a testament to just how accessible the Apple II is from a hardware development standpoint. It's so easy to hack on that people who do electronics as a hobby find that it's a very easy way to experiment with digital circuits and things like that. And so you wind up with people, you know, developing these interesting projects. So it's a very, very cool to see. I'm quite excited about it. There are several of particular interest to me, such as the ability to read 5.25-inch discs. on a you know, a Mac or whatever using a USB connection. I'm very excited about that possibility. Just from my perspective, because I've got, you know, in my business, I do a lot of work with 5 1/4 inch discs, and it would be very convenient for me to be able to transfer that data in and out that way directly to my Mac or whatever. So this is very exciting, and I'm really getting a kick out of seeing it all, because it came as a surprise to me when it started to happen, this massive influx of Apple II hardware projects. So it's very exciting.
Okay. Ken?
Just from the list you rattled off, I'm a little bit overwhelmed at how many hardware options are out there, and I'm not sure if there's an overlap between them or where to get them all. I think there might be a lack of marketing occurring, because I don't think everybody knows about all the projects that are out there. Certainly the CFFA and the Uthernet have been on the tips of a lot of people's tongues, and I think at this time the Uthernet is even sold out, which speaks great for its popularity. But all the other ones, I think we need some sort of some analysis or compilation of just what exactly it is all of them do. And on that subject, I actually have a question for Sheppy, and if he doesn't know the answer, he can pass. But do you happen to know, has something happened in the last 5 years that has caused it to be so much easier to create this hardware? Why are we getting this influx all of a sudden?
I think that it's more, you know, I don't know of anything that makes it easier per se, other than I know that there's been well, to be honest, I really don't know. I think there's any number of possible reasons, from just, you know, increased exposure for classic computers the last few years to, you know, maybe parents whose kids are starting to hack on it to folks who are now, you know, here's my real theory. Here's what I think. A few years ago, all the Apple II developing, programming and hardware hacking and whatnot was done by, like, college kids, say in the mid-90s. They all graduated from college, and their availability to work on stuff tanked because they had to go out and get real jobs, and they started families and all that. Well, now it's been about 10 years. They've settled into their careers. They're at a point where they're financially stable, and they can afford fun, expensive hobbies like developing hardware for the Apple II. And I think that's what's happened here. I think that we've got people who are now at a point in their lives where they can rededicate themselves to this kind of hobby. And I kind of think that's what's happening. I have no evidence to back that up, but that's my theory.
Okay. Makes sense to me. Thanks.
Okay. Sean?
Well, I think people look at their newer computers and they look at their old computer, their old Apple II, and they go, well, why can't I add some of this functionality back to my old machine and make it a little more convenient for me? You know, make it put a little breath of life into it. And the Apple II's always been a very wide-open architecture. There's really nothing in it that can't be found out. I mean, the documentation is expansive, and it's very well documented. So it's really easy to apply newer technology to that older platform. It's just a very open, inviting architecture. And that's why, you know, we have all these new products.
Okay. And for myself, I'm also surprised by how much new hardware has been being made. I do a little bit of hardware, but certainly not development. I just do a little bit of soldering and cable making and things like that. So I'm pretty impressed. I would actually like to know more about how to do this kind of stuff myself, but I'm not quite there yet. Okay, new Apple II software. Not so much this year. There was a game called Escape from the Homebrew Computer Club. Ewan went up, our buddy over in the UK, put out Snap, which is a Usenet newsreader type program. I put out a new desk accessory to send text messages. There really wasn't a whole lot more. Sheppy, why don't we start with you?
I touched on this the last round, how Apple II software development has slowed down a lot the last couple of years. And I think a lot of that has to do with two things. Number one, the most interesting area of development right now is for internet-based software. And while we've seen some of that going on, it continues to be a little tricky between issues that people have just with strange problems while working with Marinetti. And we don't know. We still haven't figured out whether it's because of issues with Marinetti or Marinetti driving the Apple II GS to a point where it is encountering problems that were always inherent to the software that just hadn't been found before. And we still don't know which is the case. But also, other than internet-type software, most of the stuff that people want for the Apple II has been done after all these years. And the things that haven't been are such huge projects that there's nobody who has the time to do them. The stuff that people would still like to see, like an awesome word processor for the GS, for example, that's a huge project.
Mm-hmm.
And beside that, it's the sort of thing that nobody has the time for, and there just aren't that many people who, even among big Apple II fans, would still use it, just because an Apple II is, there are almost no people left for whom the Apple II is their only computer. They use it as a hobby now. And so that kind of project just doesn't have enough of an audience to really get attention. So what you see is these very little fun projects rather than big ones. And that's, I think, a natural evolution of the Apple II software market.
Okay. On to Ken.
But I do think that there is some cool software that's occurring. The Dora the Explorer coloring book that recently came out. It may not be a very complex program, but it's certainly beyond my capabilities. And it's simple, it's effective, and it's fun, especially for the target audience. So I have no problem with that. There's also, I've noticed, old programmers, well, I don't want to say old, but experienced programmers coming back into the fold, maybe not providing new software, but just making their experience software available again. Peter Watson with his MUG, which is a MS-DOS utilities NDA, and Mark Percival with DiskMaker 8 both have their own domains now, which are very easy to find. You just do a Google search on their names, and probably one of the top hits. So you don't have to go digging through these FTP archives or this or that. It's just, I think it's becoming easier to find these different softwares instead of trying to dig through compilations that are out there.
Is Knitier actually a word?
It is now.
As much as inbuilt is.
I see. On to Sean.
Yeah, I think software is predominantly going to be with utilities that people have identified a need for, and they write it to get something done, usually to make their life easier with interfacing the old computer with the new, or providing that kind of internet connectivity. And then some kind of functionality, and then there's going to be the fun projects that people have a personal interest in that applies really to them that may also be applicable to others as well. I mean, they're just going to be fun little projects that people like to work on, and very few people are out to make a buck with the Apple II anymore as far as writing shareware or everything that comes out pretty much is free nowadays. So it's all good.
Okay. Yeah, from my own perspective as a developer, a very small developer over here, time tends to be an issue. Not so much ideas, but time is kind of a big deal, and for some reason I only get motivated to actually complete something in June for some unknown reason. anyway, let's continue on. Emulator development was a bit more active than Apple II software development. Why don't we go ahead and start with someone who is an emulator developer themselves? That's Sheppy with Suite 16 for OS X.
Yeah, it's been very exciting. In particular, I'm really impressed by the work that's happened the last several years, and it slowed down just because it's, I think, reached a pinnacle of awesomeness with Virtual 2, which is easily the best 8-bit Apple II emulator I've ever seen. It's just loaded with really impressive features, and I'm a little jealous. Sweet 16, I had a public beta release of version 2 this summer of that GS emulator, and I'm hoping to get a beta 2 out sometime before long, but it's been a very hectic few months for me, and I haven't had as much time to work on it as I would like. It's funny, there was somebody who's been clamoring for a beta 2 release because there are specific issues he wants fixed. And I fixed those issues, and I sent him a copy saying, hey, what if I release this as the public beta 2? And he was so underwhelmed, he told me not to release it yet. I'm like, wow, that's a bad sign. That's kind of just how little progress I've made. So I'm hopeful that sometime in the not-too-distant future I'll be able to get that out. I continue to plink away at it, and I continue to look at the design of certain features and kind of scratch away at them, coming up with newer and better ways to do things.
Okay.
But the other emulators, the progress that's been made there has been awesome, and it's very cool to see.
Okay. Ken?
Well, I don't really have all that much experience with emulators. I was using Bernie to the Rescue up until this last June, when I dropped my PowerBook and broke it irreparably, and had to upgrade to an Intel machine, which was not very Bernie friendly. So now I'm using Sweet 16, not the version that Sheppy released last year, but the one just before that, which gets all my needs done. I used it this past November to help me import 700 pages of HTML content into a single SQL database for use with WordPress. So thank you, Sheppy. Could not have done it without you. Other than that, you and YNAP over in England sent me a picture 2 or 3 months ago of Sweet 16 on an iPod Touch. And unfortunately, it was the non-interactive demo. All you could do was look at the 2GS Finder via Sweet 16. And you could not pull down the menus or click on the icons or type into a window or anything. And I'm hoping, I don't know how, but I'm hoping maybe we can get an Apple II running on an iPhone or something.
That's something I'm going to investigate as soon as Apple releases the iPod Touch iPhone SDK next month, is I'm going to see if I can do it. And if I can make it work, then I'm going to have to go through the potential battle of getting permission from the original authors, Henrique and Andre, to actually release it. But I'm seriously going to look at doing that, because in theory it shouldn't be all that hard, except for certain user interface issues, like how to simulate a mouse when all you have is a finger on the screen. But I'm going to try it.
Wow, that's a scoop, isn't it? You heard it here first on A2 Unplugged.
Yes. I totally intend to give that a shot, because if nothing else, I want it for me.
Okay. Go ahead, Ken.
Would that be an update of the Mac application, or would it be an application?
Yeah, I would be porting the Mac version.
Wow.
Because since the iPod Touch is Mac OS 10 based, in theory that would be a relatively easy port depending on specifics of the developer kit, and I won't know those until they actually release it next month. So we will see what kind of job it is, and it may not even be possible given whatever specifics come to pass, assuming that it is possible, I'm going to give it a shot.
Okay. You had more to add, Ken?
No, that's it. Thanks.
Okay. Sean?
I don't have much to add to that, except it seems most of the emulation development right now, the more recent updates are happening on the Mac and the Java platforms, the Windows and Unix side of the house. They don't seem to be coming along as quickly as the Mac and the Java people are.
Okay. I am also using a lot of emulation. I have been for years. I try to do almost all of my programming in emulation, just because the faster compilation times make me less crazy than I usually am. And I certainly look forward to any new developments in that area. Okay, a subject that is close to the hearts of everyone here. Juice GS Changes Hands Part 2, originally going from Max Jones to Syndicom. Juice GS in 2007 goes from Syndicom to GameBits. So let's start off with the guy who is Syndicom, that's Sheppy.
Yay! Everybody, I think, probably knows just how ridiculously overwhelmed I've been last year, especially the people who had to wait, in some cases, several months for orders to be filled. And it was incredibly frustrating for me, although not as frustrating as it was for the people who had to sit around and battle me for their products to be shipped to them. And so it became obvious by the approaching Kansas Fest time frame that I needed to start divesting myself of even more of the Syndicom empire, which had gotten out of hand. And so Ken and I discussed it and very quickly came to an agreement because he was eager to do it, was the impression I certainly got from him. And it was something that was easy for me to turn over to somebody who I knew would do a great job with it. And I wouldn't have done it if I wasn't confident that Ken would do it better than I could. So, and it turns out I was right. He's doing a fantastic job.
Okay. On to the GameBits part of things. That's Ken Gagne.
Well, first, I want to thank Sheppy for serving as the publisher for the first year and a half that I was the editor. And also, of course, for before that, when you were the editor, Ryan. Mm-hmm. If I had had to become editor and publisher all at once, that would have simply been overwhelming. And Sheppy did a great job for that year and a half, and I really appreciate him covering for that. Now that I'm publisher, and now that I have, I think, a good handle on how it is to be editor, I'm actually having a lot of fun because I get to see the entire process of Juice GS, not only from creating the PDF that then goes to the printer, but also bringing it to the printer, sending it out to the subscribers, handling their subscriptions. And I don't know how things were on the publishing side for Sheppy, but I can honestly say that, to quote the famous Max Jones, business is good.
Okay.
I'm getting orders for back issues. I'm getting new subscribers. I actually have more domestic subscribers in 2008 than we had in 2007. And
awesome.
Still working. It is. It's great. And I'm still trying to find the best print house to use. The people who got the September 2007 issue, the first run of that had some very poor image quality, and I apologize for that. It's been better since then, and I'm still trying to get it even a little bit better. But I think this is a very invigorating move for Juice GS that Sheppy made, and I appreciate him doing it. And I was also grateful that the founding editor and publisher, Max Jones, was at Kansas Fest 2007 because we did all of this with his approval after consulting with
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yeah, life is good.
Great. Sean?
Well, I think Sheppy found the best man for the job, and I think he's doing an excellent job.
Okay. And I would like to say, having been intimately involved with Juice GS from the start, that I think that 2008 is shaping up to be the best year yet. From the time I started editing it, I knew I had big plans for Ken Gagne. I just didn't know that they were this big. Okay, now on to a new Apple II website that we've talked about on A2 Unplugged recently, Tony Diaz's new Apple2.info wiki type site for Apple II information. Start over with Sheppy.
I had a couple of years ago started trying to put something like this together and got really got nowhere. But I always wanted to have some sort of a wiki site like this one, and Tony's really done a good job setting things up. The theme for it in particular, I get a kick out of. But the content is awesome. It's great that he's pulling all this material together, and I'd really like to see more contributors to it. I think the more people that contribute content to it, the better.
I have not publicly acknowledged the work that Tony has done as the webmaster for JuiceGS, and he's done a great job updating the site with new products and new issues. So thank you, Tony, for that. But as for his work with Apple II.info, I've learned a lot about WordPress in the last year, which Tony also uses, and I now have 9 different installations of it. And I don't think I will ever know as much as Tony does about almost anything, because the things that he does with WordPress, with web servers, with wikis, it's just amazing. And he's done a really good job not only compiling all this information, but organizing it and presenting it. And it's a great looking and very functional website, and I hope very good things can happen to it.
Okay. Sean?
Well, I think it's pretty cool that he started that site. He's done really well with it. I really like its visual appeal, and he's put up some information that is difficult, if not impossible, to find on some of the other competing information sites. So I think he kind of raised the bar that you know, other sites like the Wikipedia entries for the Apple II and some of the other Apple II techie sites, they need to, I think he raised the bar on them, and they need to step up if they want to have a site as nice as Tony's.
Okay. And for myself, I'd just like to say that, you know, Tony is a walking encyclopedia of Apple II information, which is fantastic, but it needs to be written down somewhere. It needs to be somehow archived for the future, and I'm glad that he's doing it in this way. I do need to try and see if I can find some time to help him out on this kind of thing, but it's an amazing start, and I'm hoping that it grows and grows and grows. Okay, last review story for 2007. We were all there. Kansas Fest 2007. Your impressions, Sheppy?
It was I think the best K-Fest we've had in a couple 3 years. A lot of fun. We had several people who hadn't been for several years whose presence was missed attend for the first time in some time. Cindy Adams, formerly of the Big Cheese of Kansas Fest, Tim Keller's Max Jones, former editor of JuiceGS, was also welcome. It was nice to see him again. So it was very exciting and a lot of fun, and I have great hopes for 2008 being as good or better.
Mm-hmm. And let's not forget Sarah Shepard making her return to Kansas Fest.
Right. She hadn't been for several years as well, mm-hmm. So that was also very exciting.
Yeah. Ken Gagne.
Gee, I had something witty to say, and it just flew from my head. But 2003 was certainly a landmark year with Woz showing up, and we had more people at that KFS than I'd probably ever seen since I started coming in 98. And I don't know if perhaps the KFS committee failed to capitalize on that, but we noticed a sharp decline in attendance in the immediately following year. But fortunately, when you hit that low, there's nowhere to go but up, and our attendance has been steadily and consistently increasing ever since 2004. We had a lot of familiar faces at KFest 2007, as Sheppy just pointed out, and I'm glad that people are coming back. I don't know why they disappeared. If perhaps it's because we're starting to settle down, have families, which is certainly the case with Sheppy and Dane Nieder. But maybe we're just getting to the point now where certain obligations are passed and we can spend more time on these extracurriculars. I know it was tough for Max Jones. He's editor-in-chief of his town's newspaper, and he had just taken a week or two off to go to Ireland. So for him to further find the time for a week of Apple II just cements what a priority this computer still is in a lot of people's lives, and I hope that it continues to be, and that they still make the trip to our Kansas City Mecca every July.
Okay. Sean?
Well, KFest 2007 is still kind of a blur for me, but it was great to see all the people, put the faces with the people that I talked to would be about coming to Kansas Fest 2008.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think that the more people, it's always been the case with Kansas Fest, that the more people that attend, the more fun we have, and the more we get out of it. Between just having a lot of people there to have a good time, there's more people there to interact with and to ask questions and to talk to about Apple II software products, both past and present and future. Mm-hmm. So I really would really be encouraging of anybody who's got the slightest interest in the Apple II to make it in 2008.
Okay. And I would echo a lot of those sentiments as well. I thought it was a very lively KFest. Certainly had a really good time seeing folks who I haven't seen in years, as well as the folks who I do see. And it's not like being a regular, I see people every day. I mean, you know, I certainly don't see Ken walking down the street every day. I certainly don't see Sean walking down the street every day. I certainly don't see Sheffy walking down the street every day. But I'm really pleased with how things went, and we had a great time, and hopefully we'll have a nice time again in 2008. That said, that ends our wrap-up. Now, I'm wondering if people have any kinds of predictions that they'd like to make for 2008. Just anything off the top of their head about anything we might see, something great, something maybe not so hot. Sheppy, can we start with you?
Yeah, I think that I predict that in 2008 I will finally get caught up on processing orders for my customers. I also predict that I will get at least one new Sweet 16 out the door, hopefully not an embarrassingly slim update. On a less personal note, I think that we're going to see a continued slow pace of development of new software for the Apple II, mostly because of all the issues we've raised before. I think we'll see some interesting little projects and things like that, but I think the pace will be slow. I think that we will be taken by surprise by something on the hardware front, something that nobody expected anybody to do will happen. And because it's something that nobody will expect, I can't predict what it will be. It'll be fun. It'll get everybody stirred up and talking, and it will be exciting. I also predict that Kansas Fest is going to be awesome again this year, and that we will have at least as many people show up as last year, and I think more. Those are my predictions for 2008.
Okay, great. On to Ken.
Well, I hadn't given this much thought previously, and I don't know that I can think of many predictions that are very surprising. Certainly, as Sheffy said, I'm looking forward to Kansas Fest 2008, where Lane Roth, former editor employee at SoftDisk, will be the keynote speaker. I'm looking forward to publishing another four issues of JuiceGS, and the amount of content that I have for the upcoming March issue looks great, and probably some of it will have to spill over to the May issue, which is certainly fine by me. If we continue to have this much content throughout the year, then we may have to spill over into another year. So I would love to publish JuiceGS in 2009, but it's too soon to say for sure if that's an accurate prediction. It's just a hopeful one.
On some of the projects that are going on that aren't quite publicly, you know, ready for a public announcement, but you're kind of giving me an inside scoop on what's going on so that we can put out an announcement of some kind. And I am sitting on a number of those announcements right now, and I can tell you that 2008 is going to be a tremendous year for some hardware projects that are coming down the pike.
Ooh, that's...
Well, that right there is going to stir up all kinds of discussion.
I'm sitting on so many secrets right now. It's going to be a good year for Apple II people, and it's just going to be a lot of excitement. A lot of cool things are coming out, and I think everybody's going to be really, really happy with what's going
to
happen.
Okay, note to self: ply Sean with liquor and get his secrets.
Okay. And for myself, I don't really know what's going to happen in 2008. I just know that we're going to have a good time no matter what. So that's my limited prediction.
I'd like to make one more thing.
Sure.
I hope you don't mind, but I'd like to plug some of the newer vendors that are out there that are helping out the Apple II community, like 8-Bit System, which is run by James Littlejohn. He just recently brought out the Little Power 2, or the Little Proto 2 and the Little Power. And he's got some other projects in the wings. And then there's ReactiveMicro.com, who, you know, it's Henry Corbis. He's making products available that normally you'd have to scrounge through various catalogs to find these little things. He's kind of made a one-stop shop for a lot of these upgrades that, you know, that are essential for Apple II users. And it's good that they exist, and I hope that the people in the Apple II community will patronize these vendors.
I fully agree with that. Okay, thank you all for showing up. Why don't we just go around, any parting shots and anything you want to plug? Why don't we go ahead and start with Sheppy?
I want to plug Juice GS for Ken and Day 2 Central for Sean, because they both have taken over things that were near and dear to me for some time, and I'm very excited to have offloaded them onto people that I trust and respect. That's my big plug.
Okay, great. Okay, Ken?
Got something else, Sheppy.
Ken, anything to, any parting shots, anything to plug?
I would like to plug Juice GS for Ken and A2 Central for Sean. Sean has a great news portal. It's, you know, just like you said, one-stop shopping, but this is for news and knowing all the stuff that's happening and has happened and going to happen in the Apple II world. And the chat room is one of the great places to meet people in a group setting when you're not in Kansas City. And, you know, Juice GS, if you want to subscribe, if you want to order back issues, if you want to advertise, we accept them all. So come on over.
Okay. On to Sean.
I already made my plugs. You know, we have a great community with a lot of great people, and I like that we all spread around and support each other. So let's just make sure we keep on doing that.
Okay. And I would like to go in reverse order and plug A2Central.com for Sean. I'd like to plug JuiceGS for Ken. And I would actually like to plug BitStampede.com for Sheppy, particularly if you are a subscriber to Charter's cable service or their broadband internet service. I would like to plug, you know, I would like to plug bitstampede.com, because there is no better source for information on Charter than that one post on bitstampede.com. Okay.
My site no longer comes up as the number one search result when you search for the words hate Charter. I'm not sure why it doesn't show up as the first result.
Yeah, I'm sure you're still in the top five. Okay. And happy birthday to Sheppy, who just recently had a birthday last week, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. We seem to be having this always around his birthday time. Okay, anything else, guys?
I do.
Ken.
Happy birthday, Ryan. You're turning on Monday.
Yeah, in social work years, that's 287. So I generally look...
Well, you don't look a day older than 286.
Yeah, I, for 287, I look actually pretty decent. Thank you, Ken. Thank you all. I would like to thank our guests for this episode. That's Eric Shepard from Syndicom, Ken Gagne from JuiceGS, and Sean Fahey from A2Central.com. Thank you all for reviewing 2007, and I hope 2008 is a great one for all of you.
Thanks, you too, Ryan.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
And that's our episode for this week. I realize we did miss a week there. Those 10-day stretches of work will do that to you. But I think we are back on track, at least for a while. I would like to thank our special guests, Eric Sheppy Shepard of Syndicom, Ken Gagne of JuiceGS Magazine, and Sean Fahey of A2Central.com, for joining me for our year-end/year-beginning roundtable. I would like to thank our sponsors, A2Central.com, your total source for Apple II computing. Visit them on the web at www.A2Central.com, and JuiceGS, the world's premier Apple II publication. Visit them at www.juice.gs, as well as listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. Ma'alama pono, ahui ho. We will be back, hopefully, in a week to continue our look at Apple IIgs programming. Aloha, take care, and yes, I will have a happy birthday. Thank you very much.